cracking up.
I think people are frightened of these words, schizophrenia, that, but when you get to know about it, it isn't that frightening, really.
No.
It's not that frightening.
No.
Not when you've lived in, well, I don't personally have it myself, but my experience with my daughter committed suicide 5 years ago, and my son suffered with a severe mental health problem, and my ex-partner was a schizophrenic. I've had three people in my life with problems, and when it first happened, I hadn't got a clue what had hit me, but now I understand it. It's not frightening. I can go and sit in the mental hospital, it doesn't bother me.
It's very human, and I think that's why the words, so people, it makes people frightened, and it exchanges people rather than realising it's us.
It's the media, though. They portray it as something frightening. A schizophrenic did this. Mm. But generally speaking, most crimes are committed by people who haven't got a mental health problem, so it makes it worse.
Well, I think that's why, the use of diagnostic terms as negative adjectives, that was a really, sort of like, that was a psychotic way to behave, that was a schizophrenic. I mean, I've encountered it, like, there's that, the only thing you can do is object, because it is so overtly negative and critical, like the statistics about, people who commit crimes is much lower than the normal. Two or three women are killed a week by their partners, or people by their partners, and yet the statistic for people murdered by people who are ill, which is a tragedy, hasn't changed since after the Second World War. It's still the same number per year. Despite the rise in the population.
And if you're living with one of that, having been diagnosed with one of those, it's actually you're much more vulnerable to violence than general members of the population as well. So
you're more of a danger perhaps to yourself if you get not to the public.
Mm. Cracking up. Nuts.
One question for Bobby. Did you have to hunt those statistics down? Or
did I what?
Did you have to work hard to find those statistics?
Not really. I think the more you get into... Look, while I was looking online, you start to collect them and then hear them from people and kind of almost cherish them as proof that you are. I mean, initially it was knowing... getting really friendly. I mean, I've got most wonderful friends as a kind of family, but a young woman who committed suicide was 24 and same age as my daughter, and I could just see that she hadn't quite the right help at the right time, and so I was very able to be more politically passionate about her than I could say about what had happened in my family, and that's when I started collecting them. But I haven't said many of them today, but I find what Sean's done with the hundreds of words and Bob, that it's just, in the context, it's soothing. Soothing. It's sort of reaffirming. It needs to be repeated.
Crack it up.
Yeah, you're slacking.
His hands are probably getting more.
There's the brain hemisphere. Who would like to have the brain hemisphere? Nuts.
Sean, is there any like religious input in your work? Because it sort of reminds me of
I'm an atheist, so
there is
no
commentary.
You're cracking up.
Cracking up?
Cracking up is also about laughing.
Yeah.
If you've looked in the corridor, there's a nut case out there, which is a case of nuts. We had a game at the launch event of this residency, which Bobby was at, and I had a fantastic time. We baked cake, we did a lot of other things. But we also, we had a game of losing your marbles. So it's just a game of marbles, of losing your marbles, and the winner won a nut case. It is just about language and the stigmatising language, and kind of trying to reclaim that. So it's just trying to flip all those sorts of things that you get called, or that stigma that's coming at you, and just trying to reclaim that and turn it around. So that's exactly what cracking up nuts.
Can we do flaky?
Pardon?
Flaky.
Yeah?
I think flaky's been used to me, so I think it's fine. in a cruel way.
So this one's flaky. We crack it up. Cracking up! It definitely helps if I raise my voice, I hit it that much harder.
People say cracking up when they're having a bad day, don't they?
Yeah.
They use it, I'm cracking up. Mm. And really they're not. They're just having a bad day and it'll pass.
There was an
interview
in the Guardian ages ago with someone, I can't remember which pop band they were in, but they were in one of these all-boy or all-girl bands, and they said that they had a mental breakdown once on a flight. They were flying for about 5 hours, and they said that they understood mental illness because they had a breakdown. Their breakdown, they started off about an hour into the flight, and by the end of the flight, they were all happy again. So, and that was given, you know, sort of Guardian magazine status. So this is for them. Cracking up! I like working across different things. So I suppose the fundamental thing to me is language, is words, and it's about the ownership of language and the ownership of words. So there's two different things going on. One is top-down narratives, and that could be psychiatry. The book that Bobby Baker was talking about, DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, that's the book that codifies madness. It's a big sort of 1,000-page long read, which lists every single condition, it's updated regularly, and that's a very much a top-down description of certain things. And it's the same as art history, the same as politics, the same as law, all these are top-down narratives, but to me, it's about challenging that from the ground up. So what I want to do is create these ground-up narratives that challenge the top-down ones, because I think language is a battlefield. Language is perhaps the first battlefield, that's where it all started.
How many times have you done this particular workshop?
This is the first time that I've performed this piece, and I don't know whether I'll perform it again. Depends how long my hand lasts.
I just wonder how physically painful this performance is.
My hand's numb at the moment, so it's neither good nor bad.
When things go numb, doesn't matter really, does
no,
it?
No.
We'll just keep carrying on.
I'll just carry on. Cracking up.
Did you ever consider actually using a nutcracker?
There's a nutcracker in the cupboard over there. I broke it though on a macadamia nut.
Of course. So you were considering that in your performance?
Well, not necessarily. I was considering I didn't know what I wanted to do with it. I just thought a nutcracker, that would be, maybe I could make something out of it or do something with it or suggest something in some way, but I didn't know what. So that's why the nutcracker is there, and I did break it on the macadamia nut. I was just trying to see if I could open one, but I couldn't. But I came here with lots of different props, so you know that's why I brought the nutcases, that's why I brought the nutcrackers, things like that, things that I thought might be useful to make something out of.
Yes, I mean the very thought of a metal nutcracker to what in fact, as you've shown us, is a very fragile nut, is in itself. I don't know, it's kind of perverse, you know, and a bit more disconcerting than just to see you doing it with your hand. It's a completely different aspect of cracking a nut, isn't it?
Yes.
I'm glad I came today.
Cracking up.
So I think I'm on the opposite side of the fence on that.
Yeah,
one.
I think
it's much more disconcerting seeing the actual physical being of someone doing
right.
that.
Yeah.
It's like the whole nature of humanity doing it to itself, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
But, if you want to pick up on that.
No, I agree with you.
Yeah. It goes through me every time. I feel this anticipation and this pain.
Whereas I think a nutcracker would be a much more distant,
more
inanimate
mechanical.
Object, in a sense.
Yeah, more mechanical.
Mm.
I guess it could feel, in a way, quite psychiatric, in a way, like the machine of psychiatry, in your brain in there and squeezing it. But it's just so direct and physical, isn't it?
Cracking up.
Where's that friend?
I'm cracking up. Cracking up.
It's a very realistic thing about this, isn't it? It's almost
mm-hmm.
like we're watching you in pain here, and yet we're compelled to watch you in pain. You know, it's a very strange.
And I'm not stopping, even though there is pain.
I know.
I know. And somehow it feels more so with the diminishing numbers.
Yeah.
I know. It's like there's this extra complicitness or something.
There's actually a very good, I can't remember the name, the psychological term for it, but there was a, basically, if you have an accident in the street, let's say you collapse in the street, what is the best, the optimum number of people to be on that street to come to your help?
Yeah, you see, like,
the terminology of people not helping is bystander apathy, isn't it?
Yeah, but the best number is one person, because then they feel compelled to help.
Yeah.
If you have a group, and there was a psychological study done, there was a woman called Kitty Genovese, who was murdered in a housing estate in America, and I think it was either the late 50s or early 60s. And basically, there were like 104 residents in the block of flats around her. They all heard the cries and the screams and the shouting for help going on for about an hour, and no one did anything because they all thought someone else was going to do it. So that's why when the numbers are reducing, there's more pressure on each of you. When it's a full room, it's kind of anonymous. There's no real pressure on you. But as the numbers go down, there's more pressure. And cracking up. And nuts.